Cronkite said, quote, "I think we've got a bunch of thugs here, Dan."
Last Friday, the FDA called for all donated blood to be tested for the Zika virus. Starting today, most states have 12 weeks to start testing all donated blood for Zika. States at a higher risk for breakouts, including Louisiana, California, Texas, and Arizona, have 4 weeks to start testing. Because of recent breakouts, Puerto Rico and Florida have already begun testing. The Zika virus is mainly transmitted by mosquitoes, though it can be transmitted sexually as well. Most people don't develop symptoms, but those that do often get fevers, joint pain, eye irritations, and rashes. The disease has disastrous effects on pregnant women, causing serious birth defects. This month in Florida, one bag of donated blood has been found to contain the virus. The FDA hopes that testing for Zika will help prevent outbreaks in the future.
A pastor who publicly ridiculed transgendered people as dangerous to children was arrested earlier today for aggravated child molestation. Ken Adkins, a pastor who operates churches in Florida and Georgia, turned himself into police this morning. Adkins is a conservative activist who has made headlines recently by tweeting his support of the Orlando massacre, in which a gunman killed 49 people and wounded 53 at a queer nightclub. Adkins tweeted, quote, "I don't see them as victims. I see them as getting what they deserved." He also criticized a new law allowing transgendered people to use the bathroom of their gender identity because, he said, it would make young children vulnerable to predators. He is accused of forcing a child under the age of 16 to engage in oral sex with him 6 years ago.
Police in Zimbabwe forcibly dispersed another peaceful demonstration this week organized by the political opposition. Hundreds of people from the Movement for Democratic Change's youth wing had gathered to protest police brutality following the violent crackdown of previous marches. The violence in the streets is a sign of growing discontent against Robert Mugabe, the 92-year-old president who has been in power since 1980. FSRN's Gary Kaichansa reports from Harare.
The procession of 200 youths assembled Wednesday at the party's head offices in central Harare, where they planned to deliver a petition to the Home Affairs Minister. In recent weeks, police have been beating up peaceful rallies staged by people anxious over Zimbabwe's worsening economic crisis. The petition said it granted the police chief 1 week to apologize to the nation for his officers' past brutality. But before leaders could make a speech, riot police moved in with water cannon, tear gas, and batons to clear the street. Some protesters retaliated by throwing stones at the armed police before being blanketed by a wall of tear gas. The scene quickly devolved, with shops burnt and looted, in the chaos in central Harare. Hepmoch Dziwa, a leader of the opposition's youth wing, told reporters that real reforms are needed and Zimbabwe cannot wait for elections almost 2 years away, and there are suspicions about rigged elections.
2019 is far away, and elections are not only the way of removing a democratically elected government or a president from power in a democracy. This current government was not even democratically elected. Peaceful protest are a legal means of removing government from power, whether they were elected by Nikuf or dead voters.
Political tensions are rising as a crushing cash shortage makes day-to-day commerce difficult in the country. But the ruling party of President Mugabe is clamping down reflexively, and the opposition claims that it is not being allowed to campaign freely, even as discontent in the southern African country grows. Gary Kaichaunza, FSRN, Harare.
4 months after Papua New Guinea's Supreme Court ordered the shutdown of the Manus Island Detention Center, more than 800 detainees await an uncertain fate. The court is considering an application for summary judgment, and a decision could come as soon as Tuesday. The Manus Island Regional Processing Center is an Australian immigration facility on an isolated Pacific island. It houses asylum seekers intercepted offshore, in line with Australia's hardline policy of preventing refugees from reaching its coastline. Georgia Clark reports from Sydney for Free Speech Radio News.
The Supreme Court of Papua New Guinea reaffirmed this week that both PNG and Australia are responsible for the closure of Manus Island. The court's order ending an inquiry means that concrete steps towards freeing the hundreds of people held there can begin. The PNG top court ordered closure of the facility in April after finding the detention of the asylum seekers breached the right to personal liberty safeguarded in the country's constitution. But the court has not yet decided on the fate of the more than 800 people held there, most of them originally from Iran and intercepted as they tried to reach Australian shores. Ben Lamai represents more than 600 of the detainees, and he was in the PNG courtroom this week. Mr. Lamai told FSRN that the inquiry wasted time and that its discharge is a step forward for the residents' case.
Well, absolutely, you see, because all two enforcement applications were put on hold pending the outcome of the inquiry, which was going around the circle. And so that was not in our client's best interest. So we supported the application, and we're happy that the order to hold our application has already been removed, yeah.
According to Mr. Lamai, the residents will now seek summary judgment, which he says would make a swift assessment of compensation more likely. But the issue of who will pay compensation remains contested.
The orders will be made against the independent state of Papua New Guinea, but of course, Australia is morally obligated to pay for their compensation.
It remains unclear where the detainees will be sent upon release. Australia's Immigration Minister, Peter Dutton, has ruled out any of the residents resettling in Australia. Georgia Clark, FSRN, Sydney, Australia.
Colombia has declared an end to the longest-running civil conflict in the Western Hemisphere. In an historic agreement, the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, the FARC, signed a peace agreement with the federal government to end the more than 50 years of civil war that killed nearly 225,000 people in a South American nation. Andalusia Knoll has more.
Las delegaciones del gobierno nacional y la FARC anunciamos.
At a ceremony in Havana, Cuba, Rodolfo Benitez officially announced that the FARC and the Colombian government had inked a final peace deal. Benitez served as one of the Cuban guarantors of the nearly four-year-long peace talks. The announcement Wednesday evening was immediately met with joy in the streets of Bogota, Colombia. The peace accord comes after the nearly two-decade-long U.S.-backed counterinsurgency strategy known as Plan Colombia that decimated the FARC's numbers and power. This, combined with the rise of former guerrillas to power in various Latin American countries and the willingness of Colombian President Juan Manuel Santos to negotiate with the guerrilla commanders, paved the path for the negotiations. As part of the agreement, the FARC will turn over their weapons in exchange for access to the political system. Iván Márquez, the chief negotiator for the FARC, said that the peace agreement is just a beginning.
Hoy estamos entregando al pueblo colombiano.
Today we give the Colombian people the potential for transformation that we have been building during the past half century of rebellion, so that they, along with the strength of the Union, can begin to build a future society. Our collective dream is a sacred sanctuary of democracy, social justice, sovereignty, and relationships of brotherhood and respect for the whole world.
Negotiations centered on six key issues: agrarian reform, political participation, disarmament, drugs, victims, and implementation. Humberto de la Calle, the chief negotiator for the Colombian government, emphasized the role that everyday Colombians will have to play in making peace a reality.
No quiero pedirle a los colombianos.
I am not asking you to trust blindly in peace. This is not a step of blind faith. Of course, the agreement is not perfect, but with honesty and frankness and the public support we have seen, I'm convinced it is the best possible agreement.
The accord includes the rights of women, as well as indigenous and Afro-Colombian communities.
This is the most important day of my life.
That's Pilar Rueda, a human rights advocate who served as an advisor on gender rights during the peace talks.
You can see the effects of the armed conflict, not just within the obvious impact of a human rights crisis in which Colombia has existed for decades, but also in how many sectors took advantage of this crisis. With a focus on the armed conflict, some were able to get rich, while others were forced to live in complete poverty. The truth is, this peace agreement is clearly an opportunity to make radical changes in our country.
But the deal is not said and done. The accord must now go before Colombians in a referendum set for October. A smaller guerrilla group, the ELN, has yet to reach an agreement with the government, and security analysts fear that other criminal groups will fill drug trafficking void that the FARC leaves behind. Angela Janot, FSRN.
Doctor Who's David Tennant is coming to Portland for his latest film, Bad Samaritan. Tennant will be starring as a car valet who's using his business as a front to steal from the houses of his patrons in director Dean Devlin's upcoming movie. In the past, Tennant has been in TV shows like Jessica Jones and Broadchurch, and in movies including Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. But his most famous work is, without a doubt, his role as the 10th Doctor in the popular Doctor Who series. The appearance of such a beloved actor is sure to excite many Whovians in the Portland area. Recently, Tennant read out the tweets sent by Donald Trump haters, scolding the Republican presidential nominee for not understanding how Scotland voted on Brexit.
With pleasure. They voted Remain, you wiggy slice. Scotland voted Remain, you weapons-grade plum. They voted Remain, and they hate your guts, you ludicrous tangerine b****. Scotland voted to stay, you numpty. Scotland voted overwhelmingly to stay in Europe, you two-paid b****. Scotland voted to stay, you witless b****.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Layla Yao and Chris Andre. Special thanks to Free Speech Radio News and Oregon News Service. Engineering is Ian Sparky Gadberry. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Scoop Loving. The podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News. You're listening to KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath at 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River at 91.9 FM. I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Lisa Loving. Coming up on Monday morning on KBOO, at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, on More Talk Radio, hosts Celeste Carey and Cecil Prescott speak with Patricia Rumer and Marco Mejia from the Interfaith Movement for Immigrant Justice about the injustices current immigration policies inflict on the entire community.